And we'll start by showing a little video related to global dignity that kind of sums up what started us in this international project that has quite high level supporters from the UN peace messengers like Michael Douglas and Muhammad Ali to Nobel Prize winners and to some other well-known figures like the musician activist Peter Gabriel. So I saw a short video clip giving some background, and then I will first speak briefly. Håkan will continue, and then after that, John Bryant. We'll start with this short video. Okei, siis tässä oli vähän taustaa Global Dignity-hankkeeseen. Ja tämä dignityhän sanana tarkoittaa sitä ajatusta, että jokaisella ihmisellä on oikeus ihmisarvoiseen elämään. Eli siinä on kysymys jokaisen ihmisen elämän arvokkuuden tunnustamisesta ja siinä mielessä arvonannosta. Ja tätä voi ajatella, että tässä on kaksi tasoa, että on toisaalta tällainen globaali ja yhteiskunnallinen taso, jolla se tarkoittaa oikeus ihmisarvoisen elämään. Et jokaisella on siis mahdollisuudet toteuttaa omaa ainutlaatuista potentiaalia ihmisenä elämässä, joka tarkoittaa oikeutta tiettyyn terveydenhoidon tasoon, tiettyyn koulutuksen tasoon, tiettyyn perustulon tasoon. Ja tässä suhteessa maailmassa vallitsee vielä tosi jyrkkä, voisi sanoa, tällainen ihmisarvon kuilu. Eli tällä hetkellähän maailmassa päivittäin, jos katsotaan YK:n alaisen vaikka maailman terveysjärjestö WHO:n lukuja, niin on aika järkyttäviä. 50 000 ihmistä kuolee päivittäin yksinkertaisesti estettävissä oleviin syihin. Siis aliravitsemus, yksinkertaiset sairaudet, johon meillä on olemassa lääkkeitä joka apteekissa, niin kuin joka korttelissa länsimaissa. Ja se tosiasia, että 50 000 ihmistä, Håkon of Norway, I think he's a really interesting person. Håkon studied in Berkeley and London School of Economics, and he was specialized on these topics that he is now talking about and that we are doing in the Global Dignity Project. So I would call him an intellectual crown prince. Secondly, what I'm impressed by is that the fact that that he is so down to earth, that there's some very humane, something very humane about him. Well, but you will see that. So please, Håkon, the floor is yours.
Take a little while. Thank you, Pekka. Pekka is a good friend of mine. One of those guys that he can do technology. he did his PhD, I think, when he was 22, right? You're working on what? 20. Oh, he did his PhD when he was 20. You're working on your 40th book, and you're younger than I am. You know, it gives you a bit of perspective on your own life, I guess. So I wanted to show you some graphs, just because I think they're so great. These graphs are made by a guy called Hans Rosling. He's a professor at the Karolinska Institutet in Sweden. And can you hear me okay? Even though I'm not using the microphone? I like speaking loud, so. Right, this is the world. And on the axis down here, you have income. And on that axis, you have life expectancy. And this is the year 1975, right? So we'll see what happens to the world when we travel from 1975 and then until 2004, I think it is. And when the world moves up, we become healthier. And when the world moves to the right, we become richer. So this is the world from 1976 until 2005. And we can see that the world has become both richer and healthier in this period. So this is indeed a good story because we're moving up towards 67.4 on average life expectancy, and we're making $7,376 per person in the world. So more than before. So that's the positive part of the story. Actually, if you look at the world, I mean, Pekka showed you quite a few figures of some of the challenges of the world. But if you look at it, we're actually pulling more people out of poverty than ever before. We have more democracy, we have less conflicts, less wars, and basically we have better health and more education. So the world as a whole has a lot going for it. There's a lot of things that are going the right direction. But money and health are not evenly distributed among regions. So these are the regions in the world. You have Sub-Saharan Africa here at the bottom, and then you have the OECD countries up at the top right. So you see there's quite a difference between the regions of the world, but also, of course, between the countries within the region. This is Sub-Saharan Africa, and there's quite a big difference, and that's important to remember. Also in Sub-Saharan Africa, from Mauritius up here to Sierra Leone down here. And as I'll move through the different regions of the world, I'll do that quite quickly. You'll see that they're all there's quite a big difference among the different countries. There's a variation in each region. The OECD countries are the only ones that are all rich and healthy. So we're all up here. We see the richest country of them all is Luxembourg up here. And I found Finland actually yesterday. It's somewhere here. There it is. Is it? It's around there somewhere. So definitely, at the very top, together with Norway and the U.S. and a bunch of other countries. All right, I'll show you the next one. There's over 6 billion people in the world today, and the woman that's standing in the middle here, she earns $10 a day. You can think euros, I guess. There's a lot of people in the world, and they will now come falling down from the skies, and they will form a graph that shows you which people earn $1 a day and which people earn $100 a day, or 100 euros a day. So we see all the people in the world have now fallen down to this mountain, and it represents the number of people on different income levels. So you see that most people in the world live on from less than a dollar a day until $5-6 a day. That's the big chunk of the people in the world. Most of us, living in the Nordic countries, we're all up here, right? So if you see it sort of in the global perspective, it's quite amazing, the difference. And that's what we're gonna look at now. This is the world's income, the whole income of the world. And it's unequally distributed. We'll see that here. The 20% richest of the world they take around 74% of the pie, right? 74%. The 80% rest of the world, of the population, they take 26%. And now look at this. The 20% poorest people in the world take 2% of the pie. So quite a big difference from those 2% to those 74%. There's just as many people here sharing that pie as there are over there sharing the 74%. How many people here have heard of the Millennium Development Goals? Raise your arm. How many people? You see, this is a competition with Norwegian students, because I've been talking to around 10,000 Norwegian students doing this, and every time I ask them, so how many people have heard of the Millennium Development Goals? So how many here in Finland? Quite a few. More than the average in Norway, probably. The Millennium Development Goals is great because in 2000 the world leaders came together and they said, okay, so where do we want to go with this world? What do we want to get done? So development issues, you know, two of the questions we can ask is what do we want to do? But it's also important to ask the question, how do we do that? So I'll just go quickly through them. You've probably seen them before. Some of you, we want to halve extreme poverty by the year 2015. It's all by 2015. We want universal education, primary education, gender equality. We want to better child health, maternal health. We want to halt and reverse HIV/AIDS. We want environmental sustainability and the global partnership. And all this by 2015. So that's the first time that the whole world has gotten together and set concrete goals with a time limit, and we are moving forward. As I said in the beginning, the world as a whole is doing a lot better. We're getting close to halving extreme poverty by 2015 as a world, but then of course there's regions that are lagging behind. You have the drivers like China, India, you know, that are pulling millions and millions of people out of extreme poverty, but then you have sub-Saharan Africa that are not progressing as quickly as we would want. So that's sort of what we want to do, and then I'll tell you a little bit of how we're going to do, because I want to show you sort of the connectedness between this and dignity. And I'll tell you some stories from Sierra Leone and from South Africa towards the end. So it's not all theory. I'm going to tell you some stories as well. So John will be happy because he doesn't want me to bore you with all my theory. But anyway, this is a graph that is not as cool as the ones I showed you that Hans had made, because these I have made. You see the upside down blue one. So these are the idea is that you have these two movements, the top-down initiatives and the bottom-up initiatives. And it's when you have the top-down initiatives, such as global initiatives, you know, UN and international organizations and the national authorities working together with the grassroots movements, the bottom-up, the local communities, you know, working together with the wishes of the people on the ground that we're working together with. That's when you get sustainable development, when these things work together. So, I'm going to show you some examples of this from Sierra Leone. Sierra Leone was in civil war just 8 years ago, and it's up here at the west part of Africa. In Sierra Leone, which is, at the time when I was there, they were at bottom of the human development index, while Norway was at the top, there was really, you know, a really, I couldn't go to a country with a bigger, you know, difference. 2 months that they call hungry season, because it's dry and they can't produce enough food to feed themselves. So and a lot of people in Sierra Leone live directly off the land. First it's arms control, because they came out of civil war. There's a lot of guns in the population, and one of the things you need to do for the country not to fall back into civil war is to control the guns. So this is the police chief trying to chopping up the gun, and here's me trying to do the same thing. What happened is that when a gun comes in, there is money being given to the local authorities, the city council, and they will decide what the money is used for. So this created an incentive for all the inhabitants in this village to hand in their guns so that they'll get more money. And then the local community themselves, the local democracy, they decide what the money is used for. And in this case, it was a football court like this that they built for the money. And the project is sponsored by, you know, the World Bank and the UNDP and some country donors as well. So this is an example where you have local ownership of the project. They decide what the money is used for. They decide what they want. But you also have this initiatives from the top that work together with what they're trying to do on the local level. So that's one example. And the next is cooperations in the agricultural sector. As I told you, they're trying to handle this period of a dry season. So what they've done is they've gone into cooperations with neighboring farmers. These are 5 farms cooperating, and through that they're diversifying, you know, how they do agriculture and everything. By that you can they can increase their yields, and they will have a little bit of money that's set aside for the local democracy, and a little bit for tools and machinery for developing their farm even more. And this is also a program that's gone around Sierra Leone, sponsored by international donors, but the government of Sierra Leone are the owners of the program, and it's the implementation on the ground that really matters. And through this program, they've been able to come through hunger season without having to starve in a lot of areas in Sierra Leone. So there's these things that are actually possible to do that makes a real change on the ground. And I love this last picture, because this is sort of the future of Africa with the little kid on the back there. And it's, you know, the decisions we make and they make there, we make as humanity, that will influence whether he will, you know, stay healthy and have a fulfilling life. So what does all of this have to do with you and me? Why should we talk about this in Finland? Why should we talk about this, you know, where I'm from, Norway? Well, first of all, I think that we need to acknowledge that we're all interconnected. What happens in Tanzania, Sierra Leone, Cambodia, it influences our lives, and definitely what we do here will influence their lives. So it's this interconnectedness that the whole world we are dependent on each other, basically. Mm. One of the best examples of that is, of course, climate change. You know, that we, if we're going to, control greenhouse gas emissions, then it's a global issue. It's not something we can do by ourselves locally. We are indeed affecting each other. Another thing is, I sort of frame this usually when I talk to students, that I say that biggest questions. They show that our own dignity is at stake. Because it is, you know, when we see the world and how unjust it is, then the best way we can secure our own dignity and enhance our own dignity, and thereby, you know, enhance our own life quality, is by, you know, using our opportunity to do something about it. And I think also that, you know, basically it's the right thing to do. So I think we can make it really simple. We don't have to make it difficult for ourselves at all. I think we can make it really simple. So some of the things we can do is be curious and learn, right? We can learn about the world and learn about some of the challenges, being it local or being global or whatever. It could be at the school, or it could be poverty, as I've talked about. You know, be active, do something. What you do influences the people around you. In your school, it creates attitudes, you are all leaders in your own way. You influence the people around you. So be active and take a stand for what you believe in. And the other thing is join others. You know, if we stand together, we're much stronger than if we stand alone. So I wanted to finish up by showing you this picture. Sometimes when I show this map, people say that the map is upside down. But it's not actually. I mean, if we see the world from space, there's no reason why north should be up and south should be down. It's just the way we have, you know, gotten used to seeing the world. It's a cheap point, I guess, but it's just sort of to show that we need to see the world in new ways in order to really make it the place that we envision for the future, that we really want. This is Mutton Bunga. We met in South Africa. I was traveling with an AIDS agency working on HIV/AIDS. She's from a township outside of Durban, and we met there. It's a very poor area, she was HIV positive. And she was actually in the last stage of AIDS. She couldn't afford drugs. So basically that was a death sentence. She knew that she would die, so it's a lethal disease if you don't medicate it. And Bottom Bungle had all the reason in the world to be angry, you know, to be depressed, to be bitter, but she chose not to do any of those things. What Mutton Bungle did was go out in her own community and talk to other people in the same situation as her. She organized, you know, groups of people that are HIV positive so that they could talk about the situation, because there's two things, right? One is that you're gonna die. You know that you have a disease that will be lethal, but the other is that you're also, there's also stigma attached to it, that you're discriminated against. You know, your family might not want anything to do with you anymore. Your community you know, discriminating against you. So it's sort of a double problem, right? So she organized a group so that they could talk about their challenges and help each other through the difficult time. And the other thing she did was very courageous. She went around and she was open about her status, which very few people are. And which is very difficult to be because of the consequences. She went around to local communities and talked to people about how they could protect themselves from becoming HIV positive. So she became a leader in her local community. And what struck me with her was that, you know, if she can do all of this with, you know,
very much. And next I'm very happy to introduce another great man, John Bryan, who was born in Compton, South Central LA, and that's about the toughest place that you can live in the US. He will tell more, but John Bryan was very much influenced by the riots in the 90s. When he felt that it's his mission to work for eradicating poverty and advancing dignity in the United States and elsewhere. And since then, he's been mentored by Andrew Young, who is the right arm of Martin Luther King. So there's a link to this movement. And also, he's been an advisor on eliminating poverty for Presidents Bill Clinton and George W. Bush. So I'm very happy to introduce John Bryan.
For the discussion, we need it after yours. Yeah. Mm-hmm. We'll continue to the discussion right after yours.
Okay. You can. Yeah. This is a video. So okay. How's everybody doing? You sound like you responded like you didn't think I was actually going to talk to you. We're actually here to talk to you. First of all, I want to thank probably the coolest philosopher in the world, Pekka Himanen, who is so cool I made him an honorary black man. I keep wondering what's hiding in his beard. He's an enormously good person and honored to have him as my friend. I want to thank Martina Gamura from the World Economic Forum and the Young Global Leaders. Martina, stand up. Stand up, Martina. She's our quiet storm. You see all these men up here, but anybody with any wisdom will tell you behind every successful man is a strong and smart woman. And if the smart and strong woman is not there, then typically the man's not too successful. Well, behind this group is this young lady, Martina, who is very quiet, and, well, she's not very docile, but she's quiet now, but has been a protector of this great work that we're trying to do. And then my friend, the people's prince, the crown prince, Haakon, I like to say. I used to say, when I saw Haakon, I say, Haakon the Great. And the great Haakon, right? And Pekka says, you can't say that. I said, why? I my friends, when I'm excited by my friends, I say the great Pekka, you know, the great Martina. And I say the great Haakon. He says, you can't say that about him. I said, why? He says, because that's his name. It's Haakon Magnus. So it's nothing special. I think he's pretty cool, too. I mean, to be born with one name, Haakon. That's pretty cool. You could get sort of self-absorbed when, you know, it's just Haakon. And, you know, all the rest of us need bios and credentials, and he walks in a room, he's just Haakon. And I think you noticed when he was up here how easy he was with himself and how easy he was with you. And I think that, I don't know if it dawned on you, but typically when people like a crown prince, a future king, comes to a place like this, first of all, they don't come to a school. They go and they meet with politicians and they meet with business people. I think it's great that he wanted to come here and talk to you. And what did he talk about? Did he talk about himself? Did he say how great he was? Did he break his back, patting himself on the back, break his arm, patting himself on the back? Did he say, I'm tired of talking about me, now you talk about me? Did he do that? No. What did he talk about? Well, this is not a test. But he talked about, I heard somebody use the word, everybody else. It's the mark of a true leader to talk about everybody else, to use his light to shine a light on everybody else. Now, he didn't really tell you the story in Africa the way it should be because he's very humble. Let me tell you the story. Hocken went to South Africa, went to other parts of Africa. Here's this great man, this crown prince with all of the regalia and the security. And by the way, the first time I went to dinner with the crown prince, you know, I'm from Compton. I don't know if you know where Compton is or South Central or Watts, but it's the hood. And, you know, we don't like people walking up behind us and getting too close. You know, I don't know what you want. And I'm out to dinner with the crown prince, and all of a sudden there's people behind me and to the right of me. And I'm like, get off of me. Who are you? It's all of his security, you know, because he's Hocken. And, but you, again, you never know because he's just so normal. So he's in Africa, and this young lady who you saw on the screen, who we believe has since died, she walked up to him and she said, "You are a celebrity. You are a great man. People will listen to you. They won't listen to me. Do me a favor. Come to my village with me. Let me use you to get everybody's attention so that I can talk to young girls about abstinence and talk to young girls about HIV and AIDS, because I made a mistake. And as a result of me making a mistake, my life is probably over. But maybe I can use my life and my pain and my suffering as a way to make sure that other people don't suffer in pain." So the crown prince agreed to go to the village, and they walked around, and she talked to young girls about making a different decision that she made. She could have been angry, she could have been selfish, she could have been focused on me, but she was focused on everybody else. Now, that was meant to be a rhyme, so focus on me and focus on we, but that's close enough, everybody else. And in that way, her and the crown prince were very much alike. Both of them didn't focus on me. They focused, this is a participatory situation here. They didn't focus on, they focused on we, everybody else, that's interchangeable. I think that you cannot call yourself a leader unless you're prepared to serve. And everybody can be great, as Martin Luther King Jr. said, because everybody can serve. But that's not all of the story. Let me tell you the part that he didn't tell you. Privately, we're having this conversation, and he started almost having a tear. He started welling up. And he said, "You know, I was born a crown prince. I had no choice in it. This is my life. This is my legacy. I didn't choose this. It chose me. But people call me a leader." He said, this young lady who made some bad choices, who could be angry and be selfish, has chosen to live her life for something larger and more important than herself, to make the world better for other people. He said, she's a leader. I want to be like her. I think you should give the crown prince a round of applause. What, by the way, what an odd couple this is, huh? A brother from South Central, a professor from Finland, and a crown prince from Norway. But we're all very cool. It's a cool picture. But this is the way the world should be, that we don't do business with companies or governments, we do business with people. There's 6 billion people in the world, and there's nobody just like you. I've been to 65 countries around the world and countless cities, from south of France to South America to South Central and back, and to South Africa. And I was sitting there, and a couple stories of dignity hit me. I'm going to India later today But last year when I was in India, I'm very nervous about going to India this time because I've got some decisions to make. Last year when I was in India, I went to go give a speech. And I was tired on the way back. In the car, I left my pouch. Now, I'll show you what I mean. By the way, ladies, this is not a purse. It's a pouch. Be clear about it. You go to the airport, the guy says, whose purse is this? This is not just any pouch. Who in here is brand conscious? Anybody know what kind of pouch this is? Oh, you're too embarrassed to admit that you know. This is a Louis Vuitton pouch. It's not just any pouch. You're gonna wear a pouch, be bougie about it. I mean, So I leave this pouch in the car, and I get out of the car. About 2 hours later, about midnight, I'm looking for my wallet. I can't find it. And so I called the college, and I said, I left my pouch and my wallet in your car. They said, I'm sorry, Mr. Bryan, that wasn't our car. It was a taxi. We just called a taxi for your speech. So I'm thinking to myself, it's midnight. They've called a taxi. Who knows? This is India's New Delhi. People make, a dollar a day. You saw the numbers that the Crown Prince showed up there, a dollar a day and what, $10 a day or less. And they said, we'll try to find the driver. He called the driver and he wasn't answering his cell phone. I immediately thought something bad, that he had taken my money. And I sort of said, well, I'll never see it again. A negative perception. And the people at the school kept calling this driver, and about 2 in the morning, they called me and they said the driver finally turned his cell phone on and he went to his car and they found your wallet. And he's coming back to your hotel right now at 2 in the morning. Now, I said to myself, the wallet's probably empty, but I appreciate him coming back. So he came back to the hotel. He didn't speak a word of English. And the interpreter, the bellman, stood between me and the driver. And I looked, he handed me my pouch, and I opened it up, and inside was my wallet with all of my credit cards, my cash, my computer, my camera, my passport. Nothing was missing. So I immediately pulled out the $70 US. Now his salary for the month is about $70 US. That's about 70 euro. Imagine what you spend 70 euro on. What sort of things do you spend 70 euro on? I'm talking to you. Yeah.
Probably clothes and movies.
Clothes and movies. How much clothes and movies? You said that plural. How many clothes and movies can you do with 70 euro? I mean, one shirt? Right.
Like
so you get like one sock, one shirt, a half a shirt, one movie ticket. The girl pays by herself.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's not a lot of money, right? Not a lot of money, right? No.
But not so, everyone uses Louis Vuitton.
Well, no, but you can't get a Louis Vuitton for 70 euro. You can't get Louis for 70 euro. You can't get the L for 70 euro. So my point is that 70 euros, what he made for the whole month. That was his salary for the whole month. So I pull it out of my pocket and I say, here's my thank you. It's the least I can do is to say thank you. Here's a month's salary. He said, I can't take it. I said, there must be a translation problem. Can you repeat what I said? I'm appreciative that he brought me back my items. Here, I don't have any more money on me. But here's 70 US dollars. Please take this as my way of saying thank you. He came back to the interpreter and said, I can't take it. I said, do you need me to write this down? And then the gentleman, the driver, got a little upset. He said, I understand what you're saying, but I can't take it. I didn't bring you your wallet back because I wanted a reward. I brought your wallet back because it's your wallet. You get it? its dignity. What would happen if I left that wallet in a taxi in New York City, the richest country in the world? Would I have seen it again? Probably not. What if I left that in a taxi in London? Would I have seen it again? Probably not. But I'm in one of the poorest countries in the world, and I leave it in a taxi for 5 hours. The guy comes to my hotel room, won't take a reward. And so I said to him, what can I do to say thank you to you? You know what he says? Come to my house the next time you're in Delhi and have tea. Meet my family. Be my friend. I have felt confused and conflicted since that day, trying to figure out what I could do to say thank you to this man. I carry this around with me everywhere I go. This is the note that he wrote me in his handwriting. This is his address and all of his information. Take it. I want you to feel it. I want you to transmit that energy. I want you to understand that we're all one. Now, I could have given him that money. He could have taken it. Would I remember him? Would you remember that a year or two later? I mean, somebody brings you something, you give them some compensation for it, and they're off. But will I ever forget this man? Would you ever forget this man? He has left an indelible impression on my heart. There's a difference between being broke and being poor. To be broke is economic, but to be poor is a disabling frame of mind and a depressed condition of your spirit. And you must vow never to be poor again. You hold that for me till we finish? Thanks. I'm going to go see that man when I get to Delhi. I can't wait to get up on Saturday morning and call him to see if I can come and have tea with him and his family. Then I went to South Africa, and I was asked to give a speech, and I went to what was an apartheid-era school. You know what apartheid means? Yes? Anybody here don't know what apartheid means? What Nelson Mandela, you don't know what apartheid means? Apartheid is when one race oppresses another race simply because of the color of their skin and passes different laws to separate the races. It happened in South Africa. It's happened in many places in the world. I was in South Africa, and I went to go speak at this formerly apartheid-era school. And they had never seen a black man there as a speaker in 45 years. And the only time a black man had ever been there was maybe a janitor sweeping the hallways during the apartheid era. So I'm talking to 900 privileged young people who are privileged in many ways like you. And I said to them, I'm ashamed of you. My first thing out of my mouth, I'm ashamed of you. Because you're just having fun and you're just so relaxed and you're so comfortable. And you want the president to solve your problem. You want the province minister to solve your problem. You want the mayor to solve your problem. But no one's going to solve your problem. You're the new mayor. You're the future CEO. You're the future governor. You're the future president. You got to be the change you want to see in the world. One person can change the world, and you are that one person. What are you going to do about it? So for 45 minutes, we had this conversation between us, and the headmaster didn't know how this was going to turn out because they had never had a speaker like this before. After 45 minutes, I turned to walk away, okay if they booed me, because I knew that I was speaking truth, and they gave me a standing ovation. So I went in the audience, and we were taking pictures, and a young, and I'm going to say this way for a point, a young Caucasian man, about 19, walked up to me with tears welling up in his eyes. And he said to me, you know, my parents probably wouldn't understand a word you said today. My grandparents would violently disagree with what you said today. But I get it, he said. And then with a tear coming down his eye, he said, I'm going to be the change I want to be and see in South Africa. He said, do me a favor. He reached his arm and he took off a bracelet. He put it on my arm. He snapped it closed. He said, wear this for me. As you travel the world, wear this for me. And remember, we had this conversation. Remember the promise I made to you that I will be the change I want to see in South Africa. I have never taken it off. This is that bracelet. It says peace, unplanned, beautiful. You couldn't pay me enough to take this bracelet off. Do you remember that story? Would you remember that story if it happened to you? Would that be important to you? Would that make you feel different about you and your purpose in this world? Would it?
Yeah.
And then I have to look at Paris. What's happening in Paris right now? Is it shopping? Is it tourism is on the TV in Paris right now? What's on the TV screens that's going on in Paris right now? Riots. Riots. And people want to say that's Islamic extremism, they call it. The people in the suburbs, the poor blacks and browns rioting, that's Islamic extremism. And I would say that is incorrect. I've been to Paris. I've been to those suburbs. That's not Islamic extremism. Those are people who only believe that they're French when they pay their taxes. How would you feel if you were Finnish, but when you looked at your government, there's nobody who looked like you in high government. Or there's nobody who looked like you. There's no women in the senior ranks of business. Or there are no women in high society. There were no women in the government. There was no women who had accomplished anything or had been given any sense of respect or dignity. Would you feel empowered as a woman? Would you feel that you could do anything you wanted to do?
Well, maybe not.
Maybe not. So people who are in the suburbs in France don't see anybody who looked like them in senior positions in France, and as a result of that, they say, why should I pay my taxes? Why should I pay my parking tickets? Why should I go to school? Why should I play by the rules? It's not going to work for me. I don't have any hope for the future. So I gave a speech in 1998 in France saying that the same problems that we were having in the United States, the racial problems in the civil rights movement, was going to come to France, was going to come to Europe. And I was booed in 1998. In 2005, 7 years later, more than that, I was proven correct. Rainbows after storms. You cannot have a rainbow without a storm first. There was also some riots that I'm familiar with in South Central Los Angeles, the Rodney King riots, 1992. And I was involved in this because this was my community. And I had given up on my own community. I grew up in a community with my mom and my dad who loved me. And I used to believe that if you're poor, it's because you're poor, because you were lazy, because you were shiftless, because you didn't have any good morals. I used to tell people, get off of your rear end, go get a job, not realizing that my parents, my mother told me she loved me every day of my life. How many children have parents who, a mother who tells them they're loved every day of their life? It's very powerful to have a mother say that. So I never had a self-esteem problem. I felt like I was hawking the grape. And I had a dad who owned a business of 53 years. And so when I started my first business at age 10 years of age, I started my first business, the neighborhood candy house. I sold candy to my neighborhood friends. I took $40 from my mother and started my first business. And I started this candy, and I ate through half the inventory, but that's another story. And I sold this candy, made $300 a week at 10 years of age. Then I found girls and lost a business, but that's another story. People say, well, how is it that you get in your mind you can start a business at 10 years of age? My response, it never dawned on me that I couldn't, because I saw my father do it. So my father wasn't a good black role model or a white role model or Indian role model or Italian role model. He wasn't a good Finnish role model. He was just a good role model. So I grew up different. And I thought that everybody should be just like me, but is everybody the same? Does everybody's the same? We're made the same, but is everybody's life condition the same? No. Hawking showed you that everybody's life condition may be different, but that doesn't mean their potential is different. So out of the riots of 92, I created Operation Hope, and everybody laughed at me and said it would never work. I was 26 years old. We had one employee and a budget of $60,000, 60,000 euros, and a vision to change the world and to eradicate poverty. We've now raised $400 million for the poor. We're in 51 U.S. cities and 3 cities in South Africa. We've educated 250,000 children in checking, savings, credit, investment, the history of banking, because these kids are not dumb and they're not stupid. It's what they don't know that they don't know that's killing them. They don't understand free enterprise and capitalism and ownership, and I'm going to teach them. We created homeowners and small business owners. What's my message? One person can change the world. It's not the governor, it's not the mayor, it's not the president. It's you. So why are we here? Why are we talking to you? Why is this important? I'm talking to you. Whoa! She's alive! You guys are here! You heard me! You can make a change in what?
In life, in world.
In life, in the world?
In everyone.
In everyone. Can one person do that?
Yeah.
Tell me about people who've changed the world. Who do you remember? Do you remember the last mayor? Do you know who the president of Indonesia is? Do you know who the president of North Korea is? Do you know who the president of Nigeria is? You know who the prince of Norway is? Because his name is Håkon the Great. But do you know, can you remember the names of most presidents of countries?
No.
But do you know a name that's, do you know the name Jesus Christ?
Yeah.
Do you know the name Martin Luther King Jr.?
Yeah.
Do you know the name Mother Teresa?
Yeah.
Nelson Mandela? This is a little tougher. Cesar Chavez.
Yeah. So,
did somebody say no on Nelson Mandela? No, I don't know him. Been hiding under a rock for like 20 years. But what am I trying to say? These people, are they like heads of state and governors and mayors? The people, I mean, Jesus Christ was a carpenter. Martin Luther King Jr. was a Southern minister. Mother Teresa was a nurse. Gandhi was an average attorney. I mean, he went to Africa for 10 years. They sent him back home. He wasn't very good. It took Gandhi a long time before he gained any success. Nelson Mandela went to prison at age 40, stayed there 27 years in prison, came out of prison. By the way, did he leave because his term was over, or did they ask him to leave? Do you know that story? Can you imagine a jailer asking you to leave prison? They put him there to punish him. We'll show you. And then they said, Mandela, please leave. We would beg you to leave this prison. Can you imagine a jailer begging you to leave prison? Please leave, please, please leave. Then he leaves prison and says he's going to become president of South Africa. It's like, Nelson, you're black. Become president of South Africa. He turns around, becomes president, and makes his jailer his vice president. It's a true story. South Africa and Rwanda today have gone from apartheid and genocide to peace and prosperity in 14 years. There are no race problems in South Africa today. There's only poverty problems. Whites and blacks get along. Why? Because Nelson Mandela had a vision to change the world. Was he one person who did this? One person. Same thing in Rwanda. One person, Paul Kagame, came in and said, stop the killing. 1 million people killed. Stop the killing. No more Hutu. No more Tutsi. We are all Rwandese. Now 49% of all seats in government in Rwanda are held by women by law in Africa. And it has one of the most progressive constitutions in the world in Rwanda. No more killing. It's one of the safest places in the world is Rwanda. I was there last year. It is beautiful, and the economy is growing at 8% a year. The South African economy is growing at 8% a year. So There is a new war, and you have to fight it. But it's called the war on poverty. And you don't fight it with guns. You fight it with your head and your heart and your spirit. And the only way you can have dignity is to offer it to somebody else. Did that taxi driver give me dignity? Did he have dignity?
Yeah.
Did he offer it to me? Am I a better person because of the way he treated me?
Maybe.
But he was a teacher to me. Did it matter he had less money than I had? Did it matter?
No.
No. Is he rich?
Yes.
Whoa! Give them a round of applause. I don't know if you, that was amazing. It was like a shift. I mean, you guys are like, that was cool. Is rich what's in your pocket?
No.
Is it in what's in your heart and what's in your head? Is Desmond Tutu rich? Does he have a rich life? Is Nelson Mandela rich? Huh? Oprah Winfrey, we know she's rich. My point is that don't let anybody tell you what you cannot do. Don't let anybody tell you that you cannot change the world and be part of the solution in the world. Don't let anybody tell you the problems are too big, that everybody can change the world. You can be that one person. I am no different than you. I'm the same as you. We're all God's children. We're all connected. We all live on this and inhabit this small planet. But when you have a vision for the world, when you live with something that's larger and more important than yourself, when you're focused on not me, but focused on... One more time. Not me, but...
Everyone.
Then you get people enrolled in your... Let me stop here. If we had came in here and said, we're great, you should think about how great we are. For an hour, we told you how purportedly great we are. Wouldn't you be asleep by now? How many medals the crown prince has and how long his lineage is, and it goes back several hundred years, and Pekka sits and reads his books, every word, all 20 of them. Would that bore you? Yeah. But has this been interesting?
Yes.
Why? Why is it interesting? Other than me. Why is it? Because we talked about something other than ourselves. And that's really the message for you today. So let's stop now and ask you some questions. What have you gotten from this today? If anything, just raise your hand. What do you walk away with? What do you leave with? What inspires you? What makes you think? What makes you uncomfortable? Is it good to be uncomfortable a little bit? Yeah, it is good to be uncomfortable because you've been blessed. You live in a wonderful, wonderful country. And should you, to whom much is given, much is required. And everybody can be great because everybody can serve. So, yeah.
Yeah, I learned that one person, you,
can change the world. That's fantastic. What else have you picked up today? Can you have one name and be cool? Have you learned that? What else? Yes?
Well, it's nice to see that, like, people are really trying to make a change. And we're not, like, I was just yesterday thinking that there are so many people who just are so concentrated on their own lives that it's nice to see that people are really thinking about the whole world and the future.
Give her a round of applause, will you? You know, when you got the power, you don't need to use it. All of my heroes and my sheroes, and I happen to, thank God, be able to say they're also friends of mine. I mean, Pekka is a hero of mine, and Hawken is a hero of mine, and Martina is a shero of mine. And but I also, Oprah Winfrey is a shero of mine, and Ambassador Andrew Young, who was with Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., and Quincy Jones, a music producer, and former President Bill Clinton, the first black president in the U.S. And you lost that one. You get it later. He's very cool. All these people, are not focused on me. They're focused on we. But the more they give, the more they get. It's really amazing. The more they give, the more they get. Whatever goes around comes around. What else? Anybody else? Is that it? Nobody else got anything from today? Yes. Whoa! She wants to be part of that change. Can we give her a round of applause? Go to globaldignity.org. Sign up to be a part of the citizen. Become a dignity citizen. Read the dignity principles. If you agree with it, sign it. Be part of the movement. You can then take this same message and go talk to your friends, go talk to your school, go talk to your class, go talk to your house about dignity. What did that guy in South Africa tell me? My parents probably won't understand what you said. My grandparents will probably violently disagree with you, but I get it. And I'm going to be the change I want to see in the world. One person can make a difference, and you are that one person. Anything else? Anybody else? Yep. Together we are stronger. I'm trying to launch a civil rights movement. Civil rights movement, economic empowerment. Not civil rights, but civil rights. Because the issue today is not race and the color line, it's class and poverty. If you're poor and white, poor and black, poor and Finnish, poor and Hindu, poor and Christian, poor and Italian, does it feel any different than just bad to be poor? Does it feel any different because you're a different race to be poor? No. Or is poor just bad for everybody? Yes? Just bad. So we want to stop poverty in the world. You want to stop terrorism? Stop poverty. Yes, we can do things together. I'm going to ask my co-founders to join me up here as we make some summary and closing remarks. That means you too. I got to always make sure that it's somebody between me and the crown prince. Whenever he stands up, all of us security guys, you know, sorry. any comments before you can ask some questions? Any more comments? Have you guys enjoyed this today?
Yes.
Thank you very, very much. Thank you.
That is very good. Hold on.
By the way, guys, you know, it is okay to hug a man and say I love you. It doesn't challenge your manhood, you know. You know who you are. I mean, you're not saying like I'm in love with you. You know, you're saying I love you, man. You know, I love you. So when I first met the Crown Prince, you know, I hugged him. He's like, oh, slow down, you know. Pekka's like, hey, get off of me. When I go see, you know, the President of the United States, you know, I go to hug him, it's Secret Service, you know. Everybody, oh, you know, you can't hug, you know, it's not appropriate. I hug everybody. I walk in the hotel and hug the bellman. I don't know how I got on that subject. Anyway, so questions from anybody?
Well, up here.
Yeah. I don't have a mic, but. Well, we don't really like each other very much, so sticking together, no. We have been having a planning meeting about what we're going to do over the next 5 years. We now want to do, I'm going to India tomorrow to do a Dignity Day. The Crown Prince is going back to Norway to do one. And they're, later today, I believe they're meeting with the President here. Next year, we want to hopefully do a global Dignity Day. So every part of the world on one day. Goes into classrooms like this and teaches dignity. This is something that everybody in the world can agree on, and so that's something that we want to do next year. Our plans are very, very big, but one of the main thing we want to do is we want to infect you with this spirit so that you, 10 years from now, become the new co-chairs for global dignity. Yeah.
Which of the primary candidates does your organization support in the upcoming 2008 U.S.
Oh, look at the time. Boy, it's getting late. He said, which of the presidential, We're talking about dignity, right? Which of the presidential candidates do I can't even get it out. We support. My official response is that you never. It's a great question, unfortunately. Does anybody know whether Martin Luther King Jr. was a Republican or a Democrat, conservative or liberal? No. He was no, but but did he make it? I mean, it's a natural guess. But his father actually was a Republican. His father was a capitalist, served on the board of a bank, and the reason Martin Luther King Jr. could work for free was his dad was able to pay for his salary. Martin was probably actually leaning Democratic, but he never claimed a political party. Do you know what political persuasion Nelson Mandela is? What about Mother Teresa? Gandhi. So I think my point is you can't eradicate poverty on partisan lines, so it's important to work with everybody. So whoever's in the White House is my friend. You don't have like six presidents, you got like one. So whoever's in 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue, I'm all over him like a cheap suit. So I love President Clinton, but at the moment I love President Bush. Whoever's there, I'm working with them. So as a nonprofit, it's not as smart to pick sides. Privately, I have.
But you can't deny that somebody would be better than somebody else.
Boy, look at the time. I like your spirit, and privately, we can have a conversation over coffee. But I think that, you raise a good point, and maybe the Crown Prince has something to say.
We're about to get very dicey here. He definitely can't say anything. But I think that, look, there's two things in the world. There's love and there's fear. What you don't love, you fear. The reason the world is all screwed up is that 99% of the leaders in the world lead by fear. So you have brilliant people. Nelson Mandela, brilliant. Jesus Christ, Martin Luther King Jr., Andrew Young, Cesar Chavez, Mother Teresa, Osama bin Laden, Saddam Hussein, Stalin, all in the same breath. They're all brilliant, intelligent, charismatic leaders. Some of them cursed the darkness, some of them lit a candle. Did you get that? Some of them cursed the darkness, some of them lit a candle. Because you curse the darkness, does that mean you're not brilliant? Does that mean you're not intelligent? That you're not Osama bin Laden charismatic to some people? Yeah, that's why people follow him. So my point is that you've got to decide what kind of leader you want to be. And that decides what kind of choices you make. And I would prefer to have the choices of Nelson Mandela and the names that we talked about that lift up the human spirit. But the reason that most problems that we have in the world today is that people are leading by fear and not by love. So the answer is I want a love leadership candidate, whoever that is, and they will emerge. But I think that this is a larger issue that you guys need to debate, that what type of choices do you want to make, and maybe you should become the next president of Finland and decide to lead by fear. But I just choose not to judge. I think that that people make it very clear what they stand for, and we need to start standing for things that uplift the human spirit and not repress the human spirit. I hope that was a reasonably good answer to your question with me dancing away from it.
Well, thank you.
Yeah.
Well, thank you very much. You have been really great.
Can I thank you as well?
Yeah, you can.
The Crown Prince can say whatever he wants. He's the Crown Prince.
Yeah. First of all, now you understand why we put John last in the speaking order. I think it was great talking to you guys and getting to know you a little bit. I think that your questions and your enthusiasm here has really lifted me. I think that's great. You, as John said, it's up to you now. When you leave this room, the future is in your hands. I guess that was the case yesterday as well, but today we've actually talked about it, so that's the difference. And when I've been traveling, schools in Norway, I've found the same thing. Young people are actually very engaged of the state of the world, are very engaged in making a better community, a better society, making a better school even. You know, from the very local level to the macro level, dignity works. The way of framing our view with dignity, or using dignity as a compass, if you may, works on all levels. So if you remember something from today's lecture, it's great that you remember, if you remember, that dignity can be a great guiding principle for your actions and for your thoughts and for your life. So thank you very much for taking the time to seeing us, and good luck with your futures.
Thank you very much.
I will touch on anything. Jees, kiitoksia todella paljon. Meillä on tarkoitus vielä ottaa muutamia kysymyksiä medialta. Ilmeisesti, mitä muilla jatkuu ilmeisesti ohjelma päivät.
On behalf of Helsinki University, we could pizza training school. We are so grateful that we have the honor to listen to you today. Thank you. Ja sitten meillä on oma ohjelma.
Thank you very much. Remember, be the change you want to see in the world.
Hey, Charlotte Lindros.